Good morning, gentlemen, Rabbosai. Some more practical involvement, halachas, to do with Erev Tavshilin. So, we said that you have to do your preparations for Yom Tov. You have to do your preparations, for Shabbos on Yom Tov. And with an Erev Tavshilin, that's allowed. So there's a couple of points to make. First of all, the Mishnah Berurah writes as follows. V'kosu achronim, to be Yom Tov Shecholi Esper of Shabbos, now there's next week on Friday, Yuzoy lahaktim hachonos ma'achol of the Shabbos, you have to make sure that the hachona, the preparation of the food for Shabbos, you have to make sure that the preparation of the food for Shabbos will be in time, that the food should be edible already before Shabbos comes in. If the food is edible before Shabbos comes in, then it's possible that Shema Yikla Ochim, on all the arguments that we've got, you have to finish. It brings down very interesting, I think the Mishnah Berurah brings down, the Kosvu, the Mitam Zeh, that because the food that you prepare for Shabbos on Yom Tov has to be ready before Nacht, and we're worried that somebody might put the food on. They might remember at the last minute, and they might want to put the food on at the last minute. Yeah. And might want to put the food on at the last minute. Therefore, because of that, they said that mitam zeh, that's the reason why there's a minig that when we daven Maariv, when you daven Kabbalah Shabbos, Mincha Kabbalah Shabbos, on Friday, that comes immediately after Yom Tov, there's a minig to daven early. If you daven early, why is that? Because the wife will know that her husband's gone to daven Mincha, and they're going to daven Maariv, and then she knows that once it's Maariv, it's Nacht. Once he said Baruch Hu, it's Nacht. She's lit the candles, and he said Baruch Hu, as far as they're concerned, it is now Nacht. So therefore, if we daven early, then if we daven, I've got no chance here. Competition's too great. Yeah. Therefore, that's an Indian. That's one of the reasons why we daven early on Friday night, in order to make sure that on Friday night that falls after Yom Tov, we daven early, so that the wife will know we're davening Maariv soon, and she'll treat that as Nacht. And therefore, any preparations that she has to make for Shabbos on Yom Tov, she'll make early. She won't leave it till the last minute. She won't leave it till Nacht. Yeah, and then get into a risk chas v'shalom that may be. So that's one of the things that's brought down. Now, while the preparations are going on here, yeah, there are various shilas brought down in the dirshu here. There are various shilas brought down in the dirshu as to the other things that might or might not need an erev tavshilin. So, for instance, what about other hachonas? Yeah, we say in the nusach of erev tavshilin, we say in the nusach to cook and to bake, ulad lukishraga, and to light candles. So these are all hachonas that we make for Shabbos. I think that without further ado, I'm going to hand over because nobody's listening anyway.
Sorry, you haven't started yet. Sorry,
it's fine. These are the hachonas.
I've got a barbecue.
It's unbelievable. Outside. Yeah. Tim, this is the Rav Shechita, yeah?
This is my
okay.
I don't know if it's a show on or not. I don't see any stamp on it.
Yeah, there is a stamp on it.
Yeah, no, it could be that it's not.
Yeah,
it
said no kosh on the back. David, so you and I.
Yeah, it's not kosher.
Not kosher. No.
Is that a problem?
Wait, what are we doing there?
I think if you and I lift it up.
You need to stand on a chair,
yeah.
And you need to put it over there.
You know, I'll stand on the chair and you lift it.
What? We both have to stand. Wait, there you go. Sorry. Let's get in the middle.
This whole thing is split.
Okay. You ready for the lift?
No, wait a second. I'm moving this up like the middle.
In the middle?
Yeah, let's see what happens.
Okay. This is the best that this is going to be. What you could do is you can put it on the first loop, meaning there's a loop lower.
Yeah. This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be more ideal. We need another person to help.
That's fine. I'll lift it up.
What's the first loop? What does that mean?
I mean, there's a knot just above the feet.
One second, let me just get this up. Hold it, put it down for a second. Wait, Josh, let it go for a second. There we go. While I try to get this off.
You're not going to get it off with me.
No, unless you take the weight off.
Okay.
Is it off?
Now it's off. I'm trying to get this in.
And you hold the legs, Yankee. You hold the legs of the thing, not of the lime, of the rags on the sharuk plane.
Yeah, I got it.
I can't do this. I can't get this back over. It's not enough space. No, I can't get this. No. Can't get it in. No, because it won't.
No?
No, it won't go.
Okay, let's tie it together.
Wait, and take this back in.
Let's move it to the sensor.
Okay. My finger. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I think we should stand by the side now. Stand by the
side.
David, you stay there.
Okay, does he know where he has to
turn it? Which way shall I turn it?
I bring the elliptic. Leave it
like this.
Yeah. The whole thing is shaking, right?
Yeah. Let's go down and I'll hold it.
No, it's fine. Ronnie, I'm going to be standing there by the. I'll start here, but.
Okay. This is fine. I think actually it works. Yeah.
Started at a tour in Northwest London. Tuesday, Vav Nissan, 24th of March, Marina Rav, Reb Shloime Yitzhok, Lichtenstein, Shlifa, Rob Ben Nadas, Korban Pesach, practical demonstration. Those of you listening, recommend it to sit on the computer.
So, today, Be'ezus Hashem, Lekovet, the Yom Tov of Pesach, we're going to discuss some practical inyonim about the inyon of Korban Pesach. The first thing that we need to know is that there's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch about saying this is Korban Pesach, for Korban Pesach, Bimkom Korban Pesach. There are many shailas of people who would even make like a side remark and say something about a lamb for Korban Pesach, even though they were intending to eat the lamb as part of the Yom Tov meal, and then you would have a shaila, because if you're magdish a korban bizman hazeh, you can't bring it, and you have a liability. Some of us may be familiar with some kashrus agencies that will not write kosher le Pesach. It's kosher al Pesach, kosher shel Pesach. What's the meaning of kosher le Pesach? Because if you say kosher le Pesach, if it would be an animal, then you may be saying, let's say for example, you're preparing lamb for Yom Tov, and you write on it kosher le Pesach. That could be a problem, because Pesach is something we can't have. So that's why many write kosher al Pesach. The question is, what does chocolate have to do with Korban Pesach? But still, that's how, you know, that minig evolved. So this is a very important thing. We don't really have it in our time, but, you know, this is something which is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, that a person should be careful. Now, when the Bizman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYikayim, and according to some, even after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that's a whole discussion, whether they brought Korban Pesach after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. There are many Rishonim who hold that after the Churban Bayis Shaini, that they still had Korban Pesach. And as many may know, that many a time throughout history, especially in the last 150 years or so, there was a very big oirus by Gedoyle HaRabonim about the Indian of Korban Pesach. There's a famous Tshuva Chasam Sofer where Rebbe Kiva Eger, his Shver, writes to his son-in-law, the Chasam Sofer, I know that you have connections, being the one of the chief Rabbonim in the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, so you have connections to many of the big Askonim who maybe can poil ois by the whoever is in charge on the Harabayis, that maybe they should allow us to go to bring a Korban Pesach. And the Chasam Sofer writes back to him, that guy is a waste of time because he's a very big kabdan, and there's no way that he would allow someone that's not from their religion, from the Muslim religion, to even step foot anywhere near. And these are all things that we know about, but this is something that they lived with. And the Chasam Sofer very clearly goes into a whole discussion whether you are allowed to, you're not allowed to, and many, many poskim hold that if we could make it to the Harabayis, there is a chance that there is a oifen of how to be mekayim the mitzvah of bringing Korban Pesach, even bisman hazeh. Now, anyone that watches a bit the news, every year there are people that get arrested with lambs and hiding here and there and trying to smuggle in, so to speak, a Korban Pesach. Very good question. Tumah hutreva tzibur. There's many different angle. We're not talking about the whole Klal Yisrael going to bring a Korban Pesach. And we're talking about one Korban Pesach. No one can eat it because we're Tomei, but at least we bring a Korban. That would be the only Korban that would be allowed to be brought Bizman Hazeh. And for many Gedoyli Yisrael, that was something that they felt should be pursued. Anyway, back to our lamb here. So I would like to demonstrate a few. No, only the chalovim, only the, like the shlomim. Korban Pesach, right? We say Korban Masav Pesach Kodeshim Kalim, Benacholin, and it's like all the other Kodeshim Kalim that there were certain parts. That's what I want to show on the Indian of Korban Pesach. Now, typically, the Korban Pesach that they brought in Eretz Yisrael with Zman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYikayim was much, 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 much smaller than this lamb. And I'll explain why. There's a Gemara in Masechtes Pesachim where the Gemara says that Agrifas HaMelech wanted to count how many Yidden are in Yerushalayim on that particular year. So what did he do? He told the Kohanim that from each lamb, from each Korban Pesach, they should take off one kidney. And they should put it aside. And then they counted the kidneys, and there were 1.2 million kidneys, which means there were 1.2 million korbanos, and each korban had a minimum of 10 people that ate from it. And so that's how they knew that there were at least 12 million people in Yerushalayim at that time. And we're talking about the old city. And now we understand what the Mishnah says, that one of the nisim that happened was that no one said, sadly, because we can imagine
the old city of Yerushalayim having the same population as London, right? And the size, you know, doesn't compare. It's a fraction of in size. It's tiny, tiny. But that's what the Gemara tells us. Now, by Korban Pesach, there's a halacha that everything that's edible has to be eaten. In other words, there's an inyan of you're not allowed to leave over. Now, here you have parts that are not even here because the skin is off and the head is off, and the head was part of what you ate. You ate every morsel of meat that you were able to eat had to be eaten. Now, obviously, right, the person that he bought the lamb, he got the first cut, right? He got the rack, as we call it, and the lamb chops. And then as you went lower down on the totem pole, you got, someone had to eat the ends of the ears, right? Which is, if it's soft, the schos, and many different parts, which, you know, we wouldn't even be able to bring ourselves to eat. And today there are laws. Many of the parts are not even allowed out of the abattoir. Everything had to be eaten. The lungs had to be eaten. Lungs is a very cheap meat. There's you know, the lave and every part that's edible had to be eaten. Right? There's a famous dentoire that the Taz, the Terezov, who was the son-in-law of the Bach, took him to dentoire. He took his shver to dentoire. Why? Because his shver promised him that he's going to give him kest, and he's going to have meat every single day. And his shver gave him, I think it was lung meat or something, which is not filet mignon, and not T-bone steak, and not even ribeye steak. So he had tinnitus. So there was a whole shaila whether that's considered meat or not. So again, there are parts in the animal that we don't even look at, we don't even know about. And when there was a Korban Pesach, it had to be eaten. Now, I would ask anyone here in the audience to try to be mashayer, how many people would we need to eat such a lamb? Even if, let's say, this was part of the meal, in other words, because we find in the Mishnah that the main meal came from other behemoths. There was Korban Chagiga, that they brought it with it. Bismansh, there's too many people. They had less Chagiga when they had when they had many people, there was more Chagiga and less Korban Pesach, and vice versa. But from my Ashara, if a Kazayis, you probably can have here 60 Kazayisim easily in such a lamb, and that's without all the parts that we mentioned before that are not even here today. And even if, let's say, a person would want to eat a proper, you know, how much can a person eat? We're talking about Nechel al Asoiva, so it's definitely muchrach that the lambs in those times were smaller. Now, even today, you can have small lambs. Why is this lamb this size? It's not an old lamb. It's not a ram. It's probably less than a year old, which is the age of a Korban Pesach was Toich Shana. The reason is because this is not made for us to, to give a shear. This is meant to sell. So if you're selling, they fatten it up, they give it, they feed it in such a way that it should be worth their while. But be'etzem, a lamb that's toich shana could be even half the size of this lamb, and that's basically what they had. And based on the Gemara that we mentioned before, that the Gemara says that there were minimum 10 people to a lamb. So even if you want to have, if people have the biggest appetite, I don't think that 10 people can finish such a lamb. So I'm just putting things into perspective. Now, as was asked before, which parts were eaten and which parts were put on the Mizbeach? So this is something which is very, very much connected to the parshas that we're learning now. And it's stamazoy fascinating to go through a few of the psukim that we have in Parshas Vayikra, Parshas Tzav, Parshas Shmini, all the parshas that talk about the inner parts of the chaylev, which we learn it and we read it, and in cheder, and many things that we don't understand. You know, there's the famous Rashi where Rashi says that when the behemoth is alive, the chalev is on top. Then later it switches. How does that work? So we're going to try to explain and go through a few of the chalovim that the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayikra, and we'll explain what they are, what they look like, and it's going to be fascinating because we're going to it's live and we can connect somehow. The Gidanosha is still there.
That couldn't be eaten.
No. Yeah, but there was Nikkur. If you look in the... You also had Chelev. The Chelev couldn't be eaten. But there is, in the Seder Avoida that we say, some people say from the Yavetz, from Yaakov Emden, there's the Seder Avoida's Korban Pesach, there's a line there about the Inyan of Nikkur, which he put in, that they were Manakar, the behemoth. Now, Nikkur is a very big sugya, and today, most Manakrim are not really Manakar real chelev, because there's a reason why we only eat the four quarters, right? I needed special protection. This comes from the abattoir where they shech the lamb, and usually this is not how he gets the lamb. He only gets, I'll show what he gets, he only gets half, because the whole hindquarters is not something that we eat. So most Manakrim will not even know how to be Manakar Gidanosha, because it never reaches the abattoir. The only Nikur, the tribe ring, what we have is only on the four quarters, and we'll explain. And that's relatively easy. When I took Shemesh on Nikur, I also wanted to know it, not because I wanted to know it Lamaise, because there's no opportunity to really use it, but I wanted to get a feel of how Nikra Chirayim works. And basically, if you probably want to compare it time-wise, it's 10% and 90% in time. The Achirayim, there's real Chelev Deraisa, so there's proper Nikra that has to be done. And there are many times here in England, people always keep on bringing up, can we have Achirayim? Can we have Achirayim? So Achirayim was a Takono that Dain Abramsky, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, instituted that you shouldn't. And the reason was because, you know, there's many mechsholim that can happen. And there's a story in the Second World War where they wanted to be Mater Achirayim, because we can imagine the shortage in food. Now, when you shecht an animal, you only get approximately 52% of the animal bechlal. And I'm talking about a beef. You have a big beef, it weighs 1,000 kilo, or that's a big cow. So of that, it's about 52% is what bechlal is, comes into the parasha. Then you still have the many treifas. So all in all, it's about 18% of shechita. You shecht animal, 100 animals, 18% it goes for kosher. And that is why it's such a cutthroat business. Because Lemaisa, it's and they have to deal with all the acharayim, which for them is a milah, because why does an abattoir want to deal with shechita and all of its ramifications? It's because he sells all the good cuts for top dollar, and then we have adapted from all the rubbish, that we made, the Heilige Flanken and the Heilige Fairy Steak, all these things by the Goyim is rubbish. They make it into salami. We, because we don't have an option of the hindquarters, so we've made all these chashava cuts. I'll give you an example. I don't want to ruin anyone's appetite, but asado, which is a very big thing here in London, if you would know where it comes from and what it's considered in the meat market, you'd be shocked. It's literally rubbish. There's nothing they can do with it. It's good for trim. It's good for fat. And here they made it into a delicatessen and they sell it for a lot of money. Flanken is the same. Anyone familiar with sweet bread, right? Some people have it only on Purim when it falls out on a Friday and there's a blue moon. So what is sweet bread?
Brain.
Brain. That's what people think. Loimine The loy miktosay has no shaykhas to brain. The way it cooks, it looks like brain because it becomes a bunch of bullies. But it has no shaykhas to brain. It's a gland that is considered rubbish of a rubbish. They throw it out. They literally throw it out. We make money out of it, and it's a gland on the neck that is by the goyim has no value whatsoever. The only thing that by the goyim has a value is the ribeye. The ribeye is the only part in the four quarters that has any value. Everything else is rubbish. Now I want to tell you a story that happened many, many years ago. I heard from someone that he was the Baal HaMaisa. After the war, people were trying to find different ways of making parnasa. So this Yid decided he was going to be a butcher. So, you know, he, whatever, learned a bit, and he opened shop. So they deliver a whole front, if you have seen, the carcass. And, you know, Thursday, he stands in a shop with his apron and his knife, and a lady comes in. She wants some flanken. Oh, flanken. He cuts, draws the flanken. Then a lady comes in. She wants shoulder. So he turns the side on the other side. He cuts. Here you have shoulder. He has no clue what he's doing. And whatever they wanted, he just cut and said, this is shoulder, this is brisket, this is that. Nishgeshtoigen, nishgefloigen. He got into trouble when he tried it with tongue. Right? You want tongue here? Take a piece and this is tongue. That's where he got into trouble. But the point is that's what the Yidden are known for. In you see in Eretz Yisrael, what we've done from dry land, desert, we turned it into oasis and mamash, you know, make things grow in places that no one ever thought they would be able to grow. And the same thing is with the meat industry. We took rubbish, which by the goyim is literally thrown out, and we made it into, you know, all the different cuts that we have and all these fancy names. And it's even more confusing because when I first came to London, I had to learn all those new names that it's called here, which in America is called something else. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all the more or less the same thing. Let's say, for example, one of the very, very big items in America, and I'm sure here also, is something called naval pastrami. That's like a very, they infuse it with a lot of water. They make it like blown up, and you pay, you know, whatever, $9.99 per pound of water. And they smoke it, and it's called naval pastrami. If you would know where it comes from, you wouldn't be able to eat it. But that's how it is. And again, I'm happy to have these conversations privately for those vegetarian that may feel better why they don't eat meat. But to anyone that Emetz Hashem is going to have meat for Yom Tov, I don't want to ruin anyone's appetite. But the point that I'm trying to make is that when it came to the Korban Pesach, as I said, nothing went to waste, and every single part had to be used besides what went on the Mizbeach. So we're going to go through the Psukei HaTorah to explain what the Torah refers to. So first of all, when you learn about Korban Oila went on the Mizbeach, the whole thing, but there was halachas about Nesachim. There's the Nesachim, there's the Roish, there's a Poder. Poder is the Chelev that they would cover it. That part, I asked for it, but it was too late. There's a piece of Chelev, the Chelev HaMachasa Es HaKerev, which that is the first thing that you meet when you open up the animal. Now, I'm not sure how much time I have, but a half hour is definitely not enough. But it's 9 is 9? A few minutes, okay. It doesn't do justice. I mean, there's so much to say, even basic. By the way, there's going to be another presentation in Hen and Adas on Thursday night. And there we have no time limits, right? Because now the lights stay on all night, so we have all night. Anyway, the point is that there were certain cuts. Anyone that learned Tomid or even Yuma, that when they divided the animal in 13, so such an animal took 13 Kohanim that they took it onto the Mizbeach
And the Mishnah in Tomid gives us a rundown of exactly how he was cut up. Now, I want to make a very important point, just to explain a bit, understanding how the Ribbono Shel Olam created animals, and Lahavdil, humans are very, very similar. All the organs and everything that humans have, animals have, and vice versa. And really, we should say animals and humans, because animals were created before humans, right? As the Chazal say, "Atakidam to the Masaver." Zocha Adam is Yitush Kodmach. Sorry, is Atakidam to Loi Zocha Omim Loi Yitush Kodmach. Right? So the animals were created first. So very, very similar. The only thing that kosher animals have that humans don't have is the four stomachs. They have a whole system which also is Nefloes Haboira, the whole Indian of why they need the four stomachs, and it's also only once they get older. If you would take a newborn, any kosher animal, whether a calf or a young lamb, and you would give it grass, it would die, because it doesn't yet have the ability of processing the whole thing. And the whole Malagera has to do with that. And Malagera is something fascinating to watch. You can see it, because you can see the food going up and down, like the Adam's apple. But it has, you can see it. There's so much to talk about. But the point is that such a... back to what I wanted to say is that what the Ribbono Shel Olam created... the animal or a human body with, there's two systems, right? In order for any living being to live, we're talking about big ones. I can't say that every little ant has this, all of these things. They don't. But let's talk about the lamb. So you have two major systems that is needed in order to such a thing to live. There's the pulmonary part, which is the breathing, which also has the heart, and the heart, the lungs, is all part of the pulmonary. Then you have the digestive system, because you need to eat in order to... So that's... And the Ribbono Shel Olam decided that he's going to make a wall. There's a dividing wall between these two systems called a diaphragm. And a diaphragm is something that humans have, and a diaphragm is basically a muscle. And a person without a diaphragm wouldn't exist, because in many things that we do, and if you want to correct me if I'm saying anything that's not correct, but so far it's quite on a simple level. So a person wouldn't be able to exist without a diaphragm. And the diaphragm is what separates between the lung and the heart and the rest of the body. Now, when we open the lamb, and I'm going to demonstrate it,
so you left this here. So when we open the lamb, this is where, if you're brave, hold this side, pull it, yeah. Okay, Ravoisa, you can look in. When you open the lamb, this is where the diaphragm is. The diaphragm sits right here, and the boide usually... this is the way the animal hangs when they open it up to clean it up, the secretion. Now, usually they would just go all the way down. But for kosher, we want to check the lungs. And the lungs are in this cavity, which has, it's like a balloon. It's like sucked up in the air. As soon as the boide makes an incision, the lung collapses in the cavity. And the boide goes and he checks the lungs to make sure there's no surface, and especially by lamb, there's no surface allowed at all. By gases, that's where glot and non-glot come in. By lamb, everything is glot, because if it's not glot, it's not kosher. Now again, there's many meanings to glot and non-glot, but I'm saying it on the simple level. Now, this part is where the chelev is. Now, this is a very interesting thing. Why do we only use chelek hakidmi, the four quarters? We don't touch the hindquarters. It's very simple, because if you take a look at all this white is the chelev deraisa. Now, the Torah says, Shalom. understand? Yeah, and I just need someone to help me because my hands are with the shemesh.
The what?
Yeah, so open up, right, go one more. So one more. But by carbon oiler, we don't find any of this because the oiler, everything went, right? So, but by carbon shlomim, the Torah says azoy. The hikriv mizevach shlomim ish el Hashem es hachelev amachase es hakerev. So chelev amachase es hakerev is something that's not here, but as soon as you open up the top part, the digestive part, there's a piece of chelev that comes off. Now, one of the simonim that the Gemara gives on what, how do you recognize chelev and shuman, right? Because shuman is very much part of what we eat. That's what makes meat unhealthy and delicious, right? If it would be lean, no chelev, the less chelev, the less interesting it is, right? And so what's the difference between chelev and shuman? So one of the characteristics of chelev is that it's not embedded. In other words, chelev will come off, like it's sitting on it, but it's not part of it. Let's say, for example, anyone that's familiar with a piece of steak, right, and people that are medagdic, so they'll cut away those fatty pieces. Those fatty pieces are cooked, and when it's cooked, it's soft, so you can, but when it's raw, there's no way, I mean, you can start butchering the piece of meat, but it's embedded in the thing. It's Masha Enkein, I hope no one has ever found chelev, right? Because that's the whole thing of kashrus. But chelev comes off. Like I'll give you an example. If you take this, it comes off so easily. You see how it just peels off. It's not part of the thing. So the Torah says. So first we have the chelev asher al hakerev. So the chelev asher al hakerev we don't have here, but that's called kol, C-A-U-L. And the real shawarma, they put between every layer of meat, they put kol. Because that's what makes it. So we also do, but we don't put kol in our shawarma, we put shuman. But that is what makes the shawarma go. Otherwise, it's not, right? It's not interesting. So that's the chelev sha'al hakerev. Then you have, amachases hakerev. That's called a chelev asher al hakerev. Is there's a lot of fat that sits on the around the stomach, and it's very interesting all the different parts where there's a machloikis, what is called chelev. There's a machloikis of Rishmol and Rabbi Akiva, which Rashi brings down. Then we go weiter. We go to v'shtei hakloyos v'sachelev asher aleihen. So here you can see, I'll take one out. So one is still there, and I'm leaving it there. But this one, look how easily this comes off. Okay, this will never happen on shuman. Now, this is half of a kidney, right? So what does it mean when you see a half of a kidney? There's another half somewhere there, right? As they say, what's worse than finding a worm in an apple is finding a half a worm in an apple, right? So here, this is a half a kidney. Now, what is the chelev? The chelev on the kidney, which the Torah says, "V'shtei akos v'chelev asher aleihen," that is chelev deraisa. This is real chelev deraisa. If someone eats a kazayis, b'mezet is chayv koros. This is one of the krisis, the shloishim v'shesh krisis in Megidim Tzatzir is chelev. Now, the whole sugi of Oshem Toloi, Sofek chelev, all of this is chelev deraisa. Now, here we have a very interesting machloikis about what do we do with the chelev that's in the kidney, right? Because this chelev, you can see that the kidney, there would be in the second half, and it would be totally covered. So there's a machloikis, how much we have to go in, dig into the kidney to remove the chelev. Because the kidneys is not chelev. But we don't eat kidney, but in Eretz Yisrael, where they don't have a masoira on the chelev acharayim, which is why people always complain, why in Eretz Yisrael they can have filet mignon and all the different things. They say that in Chutz Laaretz we want to have big minyonim, so we have filet minyonim, right? Filet mignon, but in Eretz Yisrael they have it. So the answer is because the kidney is from the chelek acharayim. Now, I once ate by my cousin, and I didn't realize till afterwards that he served me kidney, nothing to write home about. So don't think that we're missing anything out. So that's the chelek the Chelav Asher Alein, Asher Al Haksom. So here comes a very, very big, as you would say, a Pandora box. What is the Chelav Asher Al Haksom? So B'poshet Pshav, it's a Machloikis Rishonim, but if you see all this white that you have, all the way up, all the white, besides this fat is part of the kidney, but even the white that's in the thing, even this white, all of that could be part of Chelav Shalakson. So came the Gedoyla Ashkenaz, and they said, we're not eating any Chelak Acherayim, because it's part of the meat, it's part of the flanks, right? Chelav Asher Alakson, what's a Ksolim? Ksolim, Rashi says, flanken, but it's not what we call flanken. Our flanken comes from the four quarters. We'll see in a minute what our flanken is in beef. You don't really have flanken in lamb, because there's not much left. But we're talking about the ksolim is flank, the flanks in English, a German word, and that is what where the chelav is. Now, one thing we know for sure that where there is no, once you have ribs, there's no chelav. In other words, the reason why we're allowed to eat chelav a kidney is because by default we know that chelav doesn't extend to the ribs. But we have a big, big problem. It's a very big but. Because if our lambs would be square, then it would be very simple. But these ribs, they go on a slant. In other words, here you have ribs that go all the way down till almost the end. But as you go up, 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 the ribs are smaller and the ribs turn. The ribs go on a slant. So what is the status of the meat that is beyond the ribs, which is not in ribs? In other words, this whole part, this whole section doesn't have ribs. You can feel it. The ribs end here, and then they turn, they curve. So that is where the... Anyone familiar with the 12th rib, the 11th rib, the 10th rib, right? This is all soft, and the ribs, they go sideways. So that is why in America, I mean, in the Alta Heim, no one touched beyond the 12th rib. So there are 13 ribs. A lamb has 14. So let's say, for example, the 12th rib comes by is discussed by beef. Because here, a rib is nothing. In a beef, what's a rib? Another steak. Yeah. And we're not talking about the London. In London, by the way, every steak is split in half. And we're talking about even the 24-ounce steak, right? So each rib is a 24-ounce steak. A 24-ounce steak, you know how much they charge for a... what's called a cowboy steak,
yeah,
over $100, just, what?
I was offered $220 last week.
What, in a restaurant?
Yeah.
No, I'm not talking about a restaurant. I'm talking about raw. I'm talking about raw, on a tray. On a tray, it's $120 for a rib, for one cowboy steak. So every rib is another steak. So we're talking about, you know, and it adds up. A cow has two sides, right? You shecht 200 cows a day, you know, it adds up. Now, by the way, 40 years ago, there was a huge machloikis in America about chelav. A very big fallout, huge. And I was still young then, but when I started learning, I wanted to understand what it was. It basically boiled down to two fingers' breadth, the breadth of two fingers of meat that goes to salami. It's here, this part, and I'll explain why. And they said then that it amounts to over $1 million, just that fat, that which is trimming, is over $1 million for the amount of animals that they shecht throughout the year. So again, we're talking about, everything is about dollars and cents, dollars and cents. Now, that's why once you start going the 12th rib, or even in London, only take 11 ribs. They don't even take 12 ribs. In America, they take up and included to the 12th rib, and the meat above the 12th rib they will take, but not the 13th rib. So there's a different way of how they do it. But here in England, the meaning was that some only take up to the 10th and including the 10th, but because it's too close for comfort to the chelik acharai. So that is as far as this whole geshaft is concerned.
L'charayim is here or here?
No, L'charayim is here, but as I said, if this would be a perfect square made on a 3D, then you would just go like this. But because it turns, so yeah, when you cut it, it's not going to be cut like this. It's going to be cut in a slant because the whole thing, the ribs go in a slant. So that's why. Now, is anyone familiar with skirt steak? So maybe they have a different name for it. But there are two skirts. The piece of meat is called a skirt. One skirt, where's the, Dr. Harris is still here? So anyway, so the diaphragm is very interesting. Most of it is a muscle, but there's some meat that holds it, right? So the red, this is part of, you see, when you cut it, the diaphragm just collapses and it just vanishes. But this is the meat that holds the diaphragm, and this is called the skirt. This is called the outside skirt. Then you have the hanging tender, that's another piece of meat. That is what holds there's meat, muscle, and meat in between. That's what holds the diaphragm. Then you have the outside skirt, which anyone familiar with the name Spondra? Spondra is something that's how they called it in the Altaheim. And I still heard from, you know, older ladies that, yeah, about the Spondra, that's what they had for Yontif. So the Spondra is the red meat that's here. But again, we can only have red meat up to a point of the ribs. Once it's beyond the ribs, we run into problems. So, back to the Torah. So we have the Shteyakloyes, the Chayra Shalayin, the Es HaYoseres Al HaKoved Al HaKloyes. Now this, anyone that learns Rashi, you have to take part of the Yoseres, you also have to take. And the Chiddush is, even though it's not Chayla, but you have to give it as part, when you take the Yoseres, ala kovet, ala kloyes, you take a piece of it. Now, there's a very big interesting shaila about the skirt steak, because one side of the skirt is towards the back, right? This side that we see here is towards the back of the animal. The same thing on the other side is towards the front of the animal. Now, which part it could be a problem? Only the part that's towards the back, because that's yoinik from the... So the Ramah says that if you eat the meat part as part of the bigger thing, then you don't have to take off the white only from one side, only from the outside side, because this white could be part of Chelev Shalak Loyes, Shalak Salim. But if you cut it off, you have to do both sides, because you may come to make a mistake, and you may confuse them. That's a whole toisus. It's a whole sugyan chulin daf tzadi gimel. So that is, all these things have to be brought on the mizbeach, and then everything else was able to be consumed, and by korban pesach as well. Then you have the aliyah, which is the famous gemara with Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira. Depending whether it's a lamb or a goat, and this is in itself a whole machlokes rishonim, whether because an aliyah is brought on the mizbeach, is that a simon that it's chelev? So toisus, that's the handarayin toisus. There's Eben Ezra. There's many. Eben Ezra brings someone that wanted to say that there's no tomen behemis. There's no chelev. Many interesting things which we don't have time to cover, but this gives us a feel of what we would be busy with this month of Samig the Shay Kayam, and hopefully we can still make it this year. We still have time for Aduma and the whole bit. Amen. 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 Okay, I'll tell you how to do it, the easiest one. Okay? Just filter it. Get two people.
I'll hold this. No, it's fine.